Hi, I'm Gary Barkalow, founder of The Noble Heart and author of It's Your Call. I'm excited to offer this resource that has been years in the making. 5 years ago, we created an online community for those who have attended a Noble Heart retreat or have taken the online calling course. For men, this community is called Base Camp. For women, it's The Secret Garden. One of the things that we offer to these communities are weekly live interactive conversations with members and guests. Now, after having done hundreds of these recorded conversations, we are creating a series of the Best of Campfire Conversations, a collection of the quintessential ideas, insights, and perspectives of our guests. I hope these interview clips help you live more alert and oriented as you walk with God, guard your heart, and offer the weightiness of your life to the world. John Lynch was a teaching pastor at the Open Door Fellowship in Phoenix, Arizona for 27 years. He is now a member of the True Face team. He has authored the book On My Worst Day and co-authored the book True Faced and The Cure.
There's two things I dramatically see is a group of us who are tired that somehow this faith has been made too hard for us. And sometimes that's our doing, and sometimes that's been the church. And we're in this season of trying to convince God that I can do what he's asking. My shame from whatever happened to me in my past convinces me I'm not enough. And I am trying constantly to prove that I am who I don't believe I am enough. And sometimes I think we're in this generation where the church, unwittingly most of the time, is setting up and just dangling a carrot for us to go after just to keep us on that treadmill of performance to somehow assuage that shame. And it never can. It just never does. And so I see this, just like the rest of us do, this generation who has almost given up on church, this next generation that said, this didn't work for you, parents. Why would we do this? And if they're doing anything at all, they may be involved in social justice, but the concept of a community, an organized group, actually living together and trying this out, trust has been broken too often. And there's too much damage and too much wounding. And now we're in that season where we're just almost off licking our wounds, a few of us meeting together at a time, but really having lost a lot of hope. It feels like we're in that season right now. And then there's a lot of really high energy, successful, on their game, powerful churches and such. But often in those, if you look carefully, you don't see genuine, authentic vulnerability where it's safe for the worst of you to be known. So there is this very, very clumsy time in our church history right now where grace is just again we're starting to come out of this cave and find each other and say, could we really live this way? Could I really live out of who Christ says I am in the power of his Spirit? Could I really not perform anymore? What if that was true? What if God wasn't mad at me? What if he didn't stand on the other side of my sin, but actually was standing next to me with his arm around me, smiling, saying, I got your back, kid. I've been crazy about you from before the world began, and I'm not going to change now just because this happened. And so we're starting to find each other, but it's scary. It's fragile because there's still that voice in us that says, you're getting away with something, kid. And and so that's why we keep, you keep, and so many on the line keep creating materials and keep creating settings where we can convince each other, no, it's okay. Come out of the shadows.
Yeah.
I was full-time at Open Door Fellowship as the preaching pastor and trying to start to write True Face, and I just felt overworked and I was buried and felt unappreciated and all that stuff that we get into. At one point, I finally said to Stacy, I can't do this anymore. And historically, if you knew me, I was just a free agent, this talented kid who had gifting but was a lone ranger. I just never submitted myself to anybody else relationally. Never would I ever come under anybody else's influence or relational. Man, I was just a free agent to go travel around wherever I wanted, when I wanted. And here were these two guys now who were saying, John, we want to do this together with you. And I was saying to them, I remember one day I went in, called a meeting, and I had written up a letter of resignation and handed it to them. And they looked at it, and Bruce said, well, we categorically reject your resignation. And I said, well, you can't do that. This is America. I get to do this. You know. And they said, and Bill, he started tearing up, and he said, of course you can leave. But he says, don't you understand? My wagon is attached to yours, man. He says, I don't want to do this without you. And it was the first time I think I realized none of us are free agents, that, yeah, none of us are trapped. When that time comes, he says, John, if you want to leave, you absolutely, but let us do it together to where you're not reacting and running, to where we can all agree and celebrate it. And it changed my life that day. I just realized, man, these guys have owned a commitment to me that I've not understood. In my immaturity, I'd not understood. And it was easy for me to just cavalierly say, hey, I'm done. This doesn't work for me right now. Instead, Bill was saying, you're one of my dearest friends. And he said, John, let's work through some of these issues. At the end of it, we can't satisfy you that this makes sense, then, yeah, go ahead and step off. But let's do this thing together. So we've had this privilege of getting to do this together ever since. And there is something that happens when it's not easy to walk away. We can see through this lens of grace that Scripture is not a book of you ought to, you should, why can't you, when will you, what's wrong with you. Instead, it's a book of you have the heart for this life now. And you don't have to beat yourself up. Don't have to be ashamed. Don't have to see me way over there disgusted with my arms folded. And we're all starting to find each other. We say back in Luther's time, there was this revolution of justification by grace. And I think we're in a revolution now of sanctification by grace. And in this lifetime, I think it's starting to happen, where we're saying, I will live out of the same grace by which I was saved. And no longer are we going to make another set of rules now of external compliance and behavior and buck up and trying to appease something that didn't work for anybody before and has beaten me up. When we talk about those who are hurting and have issues, the tragedy is we pretend like that's a small group of people in recovery, the messed up people. And it's all of us. It is all of us. There are no together people. There's only those who dress better. And as I always say, I'm capable of any sin except stealing disco music. And, we've been working on these evocative statements to try to hit felt needs. And we wrote five of them. I carry secrets. My religion is too hard. I trust no one. I'm lonely no matter who I'm with, and I resent the life I'm in. And that's places where many of us can be. And we gave it to a number of people who said, yeah, well, I don't struggle with any of those. And we hang out with a group of people who are together enough that we don't struggle with those things. And I thought that is so tragically so full of denial. Mm-hmm. And it's what our kids look at and say, you guys are not even in touch with the pain that you have in you and the shame that you have in you and how it manifests itself in your parenting of us. And so to have a community where I can be known in all the beautiful health that God's doing in me and the pain and the brokenness and the things that aren't healthy, man, what a gift for a generation. The power of darkness, the power of sin, the power of my issues is tied up in hiddenness. And as long as I think who I am is too shameful to be known, then I've just got this breeding ground for just this continued repetitive cycle of junk. And when someone comes along and dignifies my life by saying, I got you, kid. What do you got? That's all you got? Come on. Yeah. It does something so powerful. It actually breaks power. It breaks destructive power. So when you give men that gift, that privilege, and you give them the dignity and honor of saying, you're not scaring me. In fact, I now get to love you more.
Yeah.
Man, what an unbelievable gift.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if that doesn't exist, I have to be the one who initiates that. I have to sometimes create that environment of grace. And God saying, I got your back, kid. My arm's around you. This is going to go south maybe two or three times before it works. But you can't live without it. Your heart will keep like a deer pants after water. That I just got a call from a friend just a couple of days ago. He says, I don't know how to do this in my church. I'm totally unknown. And he's having to do that. He's having to say, I'm calling up three or four friends, and I'm just picking a night a week and saying, hey, for a little while, would you commit to doing this with me? Because I want to learn how to do this. And all it takes is that. And not anything more, not any more tools than that. The best thing in the world we can give each other as men, if we know each other, is to tell each other the positive that we know about each other. We very rarely do that. Men have the hardest time saying, man, I really appreciate this about you. We do a tool called Ask Me Anything, which has a built-in tool to it. So it has, you ask five questions, and like if I was going to ask my wife, I'd say, Stacy, you're going through this season. All three of your kids now are moving out of your house, and I know sometimes I just want you to be okay with it, but it hurts you. And what do you wish I knew? And so I'll give her some questions like that, and she only has to pick two. And out of that, then, she'll start to let me in. And then I can even ask five more questions based on those two.
Hmm.
But somehow, there has to be a vehicle that allows them, when they don't have a guided leader with them, to be able to start being vulnerable with each other.
Kevin Miller grew up in an entrepreneurial home, his dad being Dan Miller, author of 48 Days to Work You Love. Kevin is the founder of Free Agent Academy, an online company helping its members create self-employment. He is also the brand ambassador and marketing strategist for the Ziegler Corporation and host of The Ziegler Show.
We realized, my wife and I both, that boy, if I'm not doing something daily, if I'm not devoting myself from a work scenario to something that really inspires me, that's far more than just the money, I can't hardly facilitate myself. I have a really hard time functioning. And she saw that and saw, you know, how I was when I was inspired. And so, you know, even there, it was never the point. Well, I shouldn't say, it was never the point of her just saying, hey, just get a job to make a buck. There was that point, actually, that did come into play.
Uh-huh.
But that was a short-term fix if we looked at that. She wanted me being inspired and realized the value of that. And again, I'm really grateful for that. That's so much what my heart is today in seeing people who have become numbed to their calling, to their passions, to their desires. And I love your message about honoring the desires that God puts in our hearts, because I think that's life. I think that's not only our calling, but our responsibility. And so I can get pretty, I got a big soapbox there, but it's because I want to see guys, you know, like you that are able to invest themselves every day, you know, the hours of their day, what they're doing vocationally, what they're doing to pay the bills in something that they would, in essence, do for free because they can't help but do it.
Right.
In my business and in my personal life, I need to have a core group of people around me where we never have to ask, how are you doing? Because we know. I don't want to meet my core guys that I meet with every week. I don't want to walk into church and say, hey, how you doing? What's up? I should know. And so if I'm asking something, it's on a specific of something I know that is at the foremost of their life right now. I have instilled that in my business, which, you know, being self-employed, I don't have to. And that's supposed to be a good thing, but it's not. At the end of the day, I want the bank account in my name. I want to be able to make the final decision. But that's about it. Everything else, man, I want it in community. You know, I've got business partners here now that know what's going on because, I believe in it. Now I've learned the power in it, of community, of accountability, true accountability, which is, you know, invested in each other. Dave Munson is the guy I talk about constantly. He's the owner of Saddleback Leather Company. You can find him at saddlebackleather.com. And he hates for me to talk about how much they're making, but they're making a boatload of money. In our depressed economy, people are flying to his website to pay way too much for leather products. It's amazing. He's just been really blessed in his business. And, you know, so for him to take that, obviously his work, you know, is, as you would say, Gary, is a role that he's fulfilling along with being a daddy and a husband and other things. But he's selling leather products. You know, is that his calling in life to sell leather products? He'd say, no, it's to lead people to the Lord. He's able to take this business that he enjoys and ultimately fulfill what he feels is his calling, which is to lead people to thinking outside of the box, to a life of adventure and some risk, and to be inspired. And a lot of the same things that you and I would say, and he does it through, you know, leather bags.
When you are ready to take your next big leap of faith, but your wife is not, what then?
Don't take it until your wife's with you. I counsel from having wrecked it. I wrecked it. I'm a persuader, and I'm pretty, my wife would say, dominating, and I pulled her along. I even got her to say yes, but I wasn't really listening, and I did not have my wife's union with a lot of the stuff that I did, even though, again, I got her to say yes, and that was we have scars from that. We absolutely have scars. We're very redeemed today, but that is hard. And number one and two things that give her security today. Number one is that she knows that I am getting counsel. As soon as I start isolating, which is what I do when I get anxious or overwhelmed, she gets scared. If she knows I'm in union and accountable to others, not to her as one, but to others, other counsel, wise counsel, in what I'm doing work-wise, that's the number one thing that gives her security. Number two is that I have a plan, which is real hard for me. I'm not a planner. But if I have a plan, if it's worked out, and it could be a three-page business plan that, again, has been filtered through other counsel, that's what gives her security, to be able to see it and to be a part of it. So those two things, having counsel and having a plan, are the two things that have helped her most get on board. Now, I would say number three, but really it's even an umbrella over that. It's that we came together in care for each other and talked about our future together and dreamed together and said, what do we want to achieve? And now how are we going to achieve that? And when we looked at what we wanted for our family, for ourselves, not only looking at where did we want to be, but who do we want to be? And put a timeline out there, say it's 5 years from now. And then we looked and said, how's that going to happen?
You know, the other thing I've observed is that sometimes what I think is a roadblock to people kind of creating the next phase of their life or walking to the next thing or whatever that is, it's this all or nothing mentality. It's got to be this huge thing. The first time they offer this, there needs to be a paycheck with it, or it needs to have a crowd of endorsement to it. Versus, you know, why don't you just try offering it as you can right now? Because just in offering it, one, you're going to learn something as you offer it. It may be a dream that you think you would love to do this, and it's not until you do it that you're going to realize you do or don't love doing it. Number two, you're going to realize as you do start offering it at any level, what you're going to have to do to develop that to make a greater offering. Number three is, at that point, as you're doing that, there are going to be people that are going to hear about this. They're going to come back and say, gosh, can I meet with you, or can you coach me, or can you develop that for me as well? And you'll actually create something, a momentum, versus waiting for the momentum to grab you, like someone else is going to create it for you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, gosh, yeah, there's so many. I always have a hard time boiling down what's most important, because there's so many things that are. But that, just getting started, is such a big thing, because we do have a lot of people, different personality styles, who have analysis paralysis, and they do want everything to be guaranteed in a sense. You know, they want the 80-page business plan and to have some kind of a guarantee. You know, there's not. We're not going to figure things out until we just get started. And so if it's getting started, yeah, for free, just to get the ball rolling, just get started, because you're not going to, at some point, you can plan and plan and plan. At some point, though, you're not going to figure it out until you just get going.
Lance Hollander has been active in full-time missions work for the past 18 years. Lance has developed and overseen 2-month-long residential discipleship programs called The Forge, which involve students from India, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and the United States. He has also authored 2 books, Unleashing the Divine and Walking the Galatians Road.
You've written a book, it's Walking the Galatian Road, basically a look through the book of Galatians, and it's subtitled Moving from Law to Life. But before I do, what are the greatest challenges that are facing men who lead today?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I would answer it this way. I think there are 2 things that men struggle with, and one is intimacy with God. It's just learning how to be a lover, you know, how to have God love you. You know, there's nothing unmanly about it, but how to be loved by him, and then in turn, you know, how to turn around and be able to love with that love. So I think allowing ourselves to get intimate with him and sort of get off the crusader horse once in a while and learn how to know that side of God is a huge challenge. And I would say the other thing is just watching leaders, and you know, I'm not an A-type personality, but the Lord has asked me to do leading, and I've been under a lot of strong leaders. And I would say I think the other thing is just a willingness to be broken, you know, to allow the Lord to humble you and break you and let your dreams die. So often it seems like the Lord will give you a dream and you start pursuing it, and all of a sudden it's like, how did I get here? You know, the bottom starts caving in, and circumstances come up against you. And I think that's the design of God in some sense. I mean, I know there's an enemy out there who fights us, but still I think there's a heart of God that wants to break a strong man, allow him to be humbled so that...
Yeah.
And as much as anything, for the sake of unity, for the sake of working together, for the sake of being able to receive and to offer to one another the riches, because, you know, who's got all the riches? Who's got all the right answers? I mean, who's got, you know, we all come to the table with part of that. And I just watching over the years and just sort of the beautiful ministries I've seen, but the strong people that kind of run them often, you know, there's just a conflict there. So
let me ask you, I mean, with the years that you have been following God and, you know, bringing your life to advance the kingdom and that kind of thing, can you give us a story that was particularly notable, both in its impact on you, something that went wrong, a dream that didn't happen, or something that turned south on you that both marks you in terms of pain, but also in terms of humility and redirecting you and that kind of thing?
Well, let me tell you a story about Tom Moen and the role that Tom played in my life. And I don't want to name names, but I'll try to be somewhat specific. You know, after giving my life, say, to this church experience for 20 years, basically I was rejected out of it. I mean, I'll never forget the Sunday morning when I was accused of bad stuff. Let me just put it that way. And I was rejected out of this fellowship. Now, this fellowship was already outside of what you might call traditional Christianity. So when you've already gone outside of traditional Christianity and then you get rejected by the folks that are outside, where do you go then? And I never forget being in that meeting and hearing my name called and saying I did this and this. And whether right or wrong, I left that meeting and I drove my car to the side of the road and I just stopped. And, I mean, this was 20 years of my life. The dream died. You know, those things I described earlier, they were beautiful experiences, and I believe from God. But that dream died that morning, and I sat in my car and I wept. And I don't remember. I do remember sitting in the car and the Lord saying to me, you know what? I loved you first. You know, before you loved that, before you loved that vision, before you gave your heart to that vision, I loved you, and I love you now. And, you know, there was a breaking in that for me. You know, there was a surrendering of the dream. There was a watching of a dream die that I'd given 20 years for. And I'll never forget, Tom happened to be in town that weekend. He was visiting from Oklahoma, and a couple thousand miles away, but he happened to be in town, and he called me. And we had just met not too many times before that, and he asked if he could come over, and he and his wife, Barb, came over to our house and comforted Christy and I and encouraged us not to get bitter and keep our hearts soft. You know, so that whole experience was one of, I would say, brokenness, of watching a dream die. There's others I can tell you more, but, you know, that's...
Well, I think what's interesting in that, and what you didn't bring out, is that you were rejected by a guy that you looked at as a father in the faith.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right? I think that was the hardest thing. Wasn't so much that it was a lot of people, but it was him directly. And that so many of the guys on the podcast have experienced that before.
Yeah.
And what did Tom say to you? I mean, I love what the Lord just said to you about, I loved you before that vision.
Yeah.
What did Tom say?
Well, I think the memory that we take away from that, it mostly had to do with, you know, guarding our hearts, just not getting bitter. It was their presence, and it was their encouragement, I think, to just let this be from God. Don't let it harm your heart.
One of the things about the book, guys, that you haven't read it yet, is he does an exhaustive study on what was going on there in Galatia and Paul's life. And so it's great history that goes along with this book. But first, he tells them, by the way, from your Father in heaven, grace and peace in the name of the Lord Jesus. And so I want to just start with that verse there, Lance, and go, was that some salutation that sort of Paul put in all of his letters, or was that really God's heart towards these people who were turning back to the law, or what's up with that verse there?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the unfortunate things with the scriptures is that we're so familiar with them, we just run right by the really important stuff. I mean, the idea that Paul would be spitting mad, you know, and fuming and trying to save his work, you know, for which he's been beaten and stoned. And yet, I believe, you know, that as he sat in the Lord's presence and considered, you know, these things, what did the Lord say to him? Paul, I'm at peace with you. My grace is yours. Extend that grace to my people there in Galatia. Let them know that we're at peace. You know, I mean, are they off the reservation? Yeah. Are they doing some stuff wrong? Yeah. But we start with peace. We start with grace. This is our, you know, and if that isn't practical for all of us, I mean, we all screw up. We all make mistakes. I think we all get the message from God, or we think it's from God. Don't come to me now. Come back when you got it squared away. And yet, what happens? We turn to the Lord, and what's there? Grace is there. Peace is there.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's a section in here called Jesus Revealed in Paul. And, I mean, I'll just read you this verse. It says, but when God, who had set me apart, even from my mother's womb, and called me through his grace, was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles, Paul makes it pretty clear that, you know, the incredible thing that happened to him was that Christ had come to live in him. You know, I mean, this whole idea of the indwelling Christ that we're familiar with him. But, you know, that's what blew Paul away. And then, you know, later on, you know, shortly after that is where he said, you know, when the others heard about what happened to Paul, they were glorifying God in Paul. You know, it said, I was unknown by sight to the churches of Judea, but only they kept hearing, he who once persecuted us is now preaching the faith which he once tried to destroy. And they were glorifying God in me. So, I mean, they got it. Who was getting the glory? God was getting the glory.
Yeah,
he got inside of Paul. That was the amazing thing.
Right.
I mean, what's the amazing thing for you and for me?
That God got in me somehow.
And now, wow, there's hope. I think initially we know that. You know, we have that realization that, wow, I'm different. You know, Christ is in me, whether he fills you with peace or love or whatever it is. But almost inevitably, we get trained away from that. Our attention gets drawn away from that, and we get introduced to, well, okay, now you're a Christian. Congratulations. You know, you got to pray, you got to read the Bible, you got to go to church, you got to tithe, you got to witness. It, frankly, it doesn't take very long before we get led away from the Christ who is in us to behavior, how Christians are supposed to behave. And I think we forget who we are. I think we forget who's in us. And I think part of the reason for that is we don't trust each other. You know, I don't trust Christ in you. So therefore, I need to present some rules by which you need to live so that, you know, we can kind of keep this thing in check.
What would it look like today, from your experience, if the body of Christ truly lived under grace and through grace, related that way, walked that way, lived that way?
Wow.
How would things look different than they do right now?
Well, originally, Gary, it probably would look a little messy, you know, because, you know, when you take the shackles off, you know, people might go a little crazy. I've had the taste of living in that world. And the first thing I think that bounds out is love, that love truly does get unleashed when we stop judging one another, you know, and if you look at the book, you know, Paul, in fact, watched this happen. He watched them start in freedom. You know, they started where we need to get back to.
Right.
They started in freedom, and then they had legalism and rules introduced. And what happened to them? Well, at one point he says, if you don't stop biting each other, you know, you're going to devour each other. So the bringing in of the law created this biting and devouring one another. Well, if you eliminate that, what do you get in its place? I believe you get love. You do have freedom. You have the opportunity for encouragement. You know, it's not Pollyanna. It's not paradise. We still live with the fall. But I think what you would see is an outpouring of love and freedom. I think you'd see creativity. I mean, think about unlocking the creative life of Christ and setting people free to really follow it. Now, are people going to make mistakes? Absolutely. But are people going to learn? I guess this is one reason why I love being in environments where people have the freedom to talk. You know, they have the freedom to tell their story and in a non-judgmental environment, because that's really, I think, how you begin to learn. I mean, the Lord can show me, okay, what I did, this part was me, that part was him. Okay, the part that was me, okay, we try to leave that out next time. But the part that was him, wow, you know, I've learned something about my spirit.
I hope that these conversations have spoken to your heart what was needed in this part of your journey. I'll notify you by email when the next part, the next release, is available. I encourage you to sign up for the Noble Heart updates if you haven't done so already.